Welcome to Ever Beyond, Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, And good morning, wherever you are on this spinning blue globe. Welcome to Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyondradio.com. Today is actually Friday, just to confuse everybody. We're pre-recording for Friday afternoon, so that it'll be played on Sunday evening or Sunday afternoon PST, as the station runs on PST. Welcome everybody to our future. Let's hope nothing drastic has changed from now till Sunday. My guest tonight is a gentleman, many years ago, in a little swap forum, item swap, clothing and things like that. I found a book. It was called Atlantis. Hang on, let's put the reverb on. Atlantis, the Dark Continent. And it was a fascinating book, and it really moved me, and I was very impressed by it. And I found another couple of books written by the same author, and then people say, oh yeah, he used to live in New Bold House, which is a place around near where I live. And so it turns out that an author of a book that I really liked was closer than I thought. So many years go by, I lose the book, I find it again. I rediscover it. I read some to my girlfriend. It's a very interesting thing. And then I thought, oh, maybe I should get in touch with him. And so today, this afternoon, pre-recording, because we're in UK time and it's a UK evening. I am speaking to Paul Williamson. Good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Jay. It's great to speak to you. I'm coming from London, speaking with you from London at the moment.
But you indeed know this area because, from all accounts, people remember you. So, you spent some time living in the Findhorn area, in the community, and in Newbold?
Yes, I did. I was staying at Newbold House in the middle of the 1980s for about 4.5 years, and I've made a number of visits to Newbold House and the Findhorn Foundation since then. So I haven't been there for 2 or 3 years now, but it certainly was a very, very important part of my life for a long time, and it certainly had a great influence on my life.
So, this book that I chanced upon, actually let me just roll back about 30 odd years. For me, there was a book that was again very influential in my life, and it was a book called Adventures of a Hypnotist by Dr. Michael Rodney. You probably never heard of it, but it was the first time that I came across the idea of regression, hypnotic regression, and the ability to take someone beyond this lifetime, to take them beyond their birth, far back to other lifetimes, and guess what? You meet people you know. So, do you want to tell us about your story, Paul? Because it was outlined a little bit in the book about the discoveries you've made, but I don't want to steal your thunder. Please give us the lowdown on how you got where you got to.
Well, it started when I was in my teenage years, living in Australia, in Sydney, Australia, and I was brought up as a Church of England Christian in Australia, and I didn't really have any knowledge of reincarnation. When I was 18, I was twiddling the dials of the radio in Sydney, and I came across a broadcast by the Theosophical Society. And that's where I first heard and learnt about reincarnation. And when I listened to the broadcast, the thoughts about reincarnation actually made sense to me, and the concept of the evolution of the soul through different lifetimes, it did feel like it was true. And from that moment, it awakened an interest in me which has gone on through the whole of my life. So when I lived at the Findhorn Foundation, I was also there very interested in past life regression, but there wasn't really anything going on about that there apart from some past life readings. And leaving the Findhorn Foundation, I wanted to go a bit deeper and to find some means of helping other people that could really connect with people's souls. And so doing some research, I came across hypnotherapy, which is very common these days, but was not so common in those days. And so I learned hypnotherapy for the purposes of being able to do past life regression. So that's 26 years ago, and I've been working with thousands of people since then doing regressions. And I've also done some considerable work on my own regressions with different people at different stages. And one of those times when I was working very intensively on my own regressions was the time when I wrote the Atlantis book, which was really written and researched over a 2-year period around the years 2000-2001.
Awesome. And now, so I came across this book, about 4 or 5 years ago. And it was in the boutique. You know the boutique, don't you? So, So there's, people who leave the community in Findhorn sometimes, will, take a load of clothes away with them, but often they'll leave a lot of clothing behind. And, they wash it, and somebody sorts it and puts it into a nice coat clothes rack, and you can take things. And sometimes they have a bric-a-brac corner, and that's what I'm always looking in. And there were these pristine books. They were, it's like nobody touched them, nobody read them. As I said, the word Atlantis caught my eye, and I thought, aha. What was your process? Was Atlantis the first book that you've written?
No. I'll tell you a little bit about how it came about.
Yeah, please, because as I said, this is my entry point into it, and the process for it is as fascinating as the content, if you see what I mean.
Yes, well, it was the second book actually that I wrote, and it came as quite a surprise. It wasn't anything that I expected. But if you think about past lives, they are experiences that exist in people's consciousness. And everyone has their own unique blueprint of different lifetimes that may be inside of you. And, some people seem to have lots and lots of lives inside of them. Maybe for some people, they're here on Earth for the first time. Perhaps they've been to other worlds or other states of consciousness before this. But these experiences of past lives can be brought forward so people can channel them or allow the memory of them to be revealed through their consciousness. And this can happen quite easily. So, although with myself, when I first started doing my own past lives, it wasn't something that did come particularly easily to me. In fact, I thought I was a bit of a control freak that couldn't really let go to do those kind of things. But then somebody that I was working with just told me that what I was picking up was authentic, and I just needed to have a bit of faith in the process. And so as I believed that I could do it, more and more I found that I could also channel the experiences of past lives, and this would come quite readily for me too, even though for myself I never experienced so easily imagery. For me it was more a feeling and a sense of what was going on. This was the way I could access it. So as far as the Atlantis book was concerned, I've always had an interest in Atlantis since I was very young, and I've had a belief in it, and I've even written a song about it when I was about 21 or something, when I was sort of really fascinated by it. But I had a client that came along to see me who had many, many problems, and her name was Linda, and she's the co-author of this book. And she started tapping into lifetimes that she identified as being from Atlantis. And these lifetimes, from her consciousness, they had their own kind of landscape and energy and different society, which is quite different from the world we live in today. And then what happened at the end of one of the early sessions was that she identified one of those souls that she had met in that life as being me. And it kind of, I could feel it in my body that what she was saying had a ring of truth about it. So from there we started to explore and experiment, and I was also doing some work with her to help her through her difficulties within herself. And you can see in the Atlantis book that some of the lifetimes that she goes into are quite diabolical, and she's found really that going through some of those lifetimes did help her a lot with her own healing process to find more peace in herself. But we also started to explore then, from a purely research point of view, to find out a little bit, well, what is Atlantis inside our consciousnesses? And bit by bit, over about a 2-year period, different lifetimes from different phases of Atlantis's history just came out through us. And I started doing the regressions as well as her, and it was a very unusual method how I was able to access the lifetimes, because Linda herself was a very gifted channel, so she was able to channel a guide working with her whose name was Albany. And Albany, it turned out, even though Linda had never had any training with this, was very good at being able to use hypnotic suggestion to get me into a trance, so I could access for myself some of these Atlantis lifetimes. So it worked out that I was working directly with Linda, and Albany, Linda's guide at other times, was working with me. And then we found 2 or 3 other people around us also that had these connections with Atlantis, that also had lifetimes that linked in with our lifetimes in Atlantis. So it was like there was a whole group of us that in a way went through lifetimes in Atlantis together in different phases, different times.
Exactly. This is one of the reasons that your book turned me on so much, was because you were describing the actions of a soul group, aren't you?
Yes, well, that's it. And I guess certainly during that time, we as souls were very closely linked together. I think now, in present-day time, maybe those souls that were very closely linked then, maybe we're going a bit more our own ways now. So it was a kind of a phase, I guess, in our own soul development. But it was particularly engrossing and involving during those times. It was like, 24 hours a day for a 2-year period. I felt like I was living and breathing Atlantis, really, in some ways. So it was going on just about non-stop, and every couple of days something else would be revealed and come forward. And so we just started to write it, and so we wrote about different lifetimes and started to get a sort of a structure of how we could form the book together, and Linda wanted to co-author it. So we then sort of found a way of perhaps presenting the history of Atlantis as it was in our consciousness through the different lifetimes that came up for us. And it seemed to be presenting a place that was quite vast and on Earth from a long, long time ago, which, you know, had the kind of destruction myth at the end that was very violent, but also very enthralling. And I guess having a lot of lessons for us today about how greed and power hungry, you know, people in controlling positions can ultimately bring about great destruction. So it's something we need to be very much aware of.
So this, as I said, this is the sole group that you were working with. And what was also fascinating is that apparently random people who came along to your practice would dovetail their stories. You know, that you would describe, you would have one person who was saying, oh yeah, and I was in this room with such and such and such and such. And then the other person would say, oh, I was in the room with such and such and so and so. And they're talking about the same people. And, how long did that take to kind of grasp that there was a process going on and it was like, there's the team coming? And was there a point when you started thinking, ah, here's the next one?
Yes, it did come about like that, and it was quite magical the way it did, and there seemed to be some very deep works of synchronicity going on to bring us together. I mean, there was also one of the interesting things that happened was that there was a woman that came as another client of mine at some stage in the process, and she also had a dream. I hadn't seen her for many months, and she'd had a dream about something that was a past life. And before she came to me about this dream, I'd been working on a lifetime, which is written in the book, one where I was doing some work with mind control, and that was pretty corrupt, and it wasn't a very nice life at all. And the dream she had was one where someone was doing mind control work on her and having some very unpleasant results. And it's like she dreamt what I had picked up in my past life about this life. She dreamt that she was one of the people that I'd worked on at that time. And so she didn't know that. And when she came for this session, and it just became clear that that's what it was, it was kind of flabbergasting for both of us, really, to realize that connection.
All right, so this bit fascinates me, Paul. This bit fascinates me because I'll explain in a minute why it's significant. But you experienced your own like experimentation with mind control devices, and that you were using quantum entangled crystal slithers. Basically, you take one crystal and you snap pieces off it, and you implant those pieces into people's skulls, and you could then use your crystal, your main crystal, like a microphone. Is that the sort of deal that you gained?
I think it's not something, it seems quite removed from me now, because I've kind of moved on from that, and I don't have a precise memory of the session or how that, the mechanics of that, but I feel how you describe it is pretty accurate. I haven't actually looked through the Atlantis book for quite a long time now, so you know, I'm just going on memory what I'm telling you at the moment.
All right. Well, here's, you see, again, this station, Wolf Spirit Radio, was formed by myself and a gentleman who passed away a few months ago, handing me the whole station. So it's quite significant. But his name was Dave Corso, and you can Google him and look him up. And he was part of the MK experiments in the 50s, 40s and 50s. Nazi mind control experiments that were brought over in the CIA. Anyway, so he was part of that, and he received implants, but he's also felt that he had this Atlantis connection. And I remember reading this piece in the book, and wanting to find the book again to read it to him, because he felt that he even had connection with that. He may have been part of the military that came along later that weaponized your research in from the book.
Yes, well, it seems that that kind of device and working with people and perverting and manipulating others did become quite widespread towards the end of Atlantis, as far as we can tell from our research. So, you know, I think at times when you read the book, you know, it sort of makes it feel like, you know, the characters in the book were right at the center and, you know, the only ones doing some of these things. But I feel it was something which, you know, there are many instances of these kind of activities going on all over the place there. But yes, it's a very, very interesting concept. For me, one of the other aspects of it, the whole thing about, you know, being able to access an experience of a past life and then someone else being able to access something that ties in with that independently, and all the evidence of it links up together. That's something which I've been able to do with people quite independently of the Atlantis civilization. Like for instance, you know, in recent months I had three sisters that I was working with together one afternoon, and they were going into all sorts of different lifetimes, which are, you know, fairly recent lifetimes, not going right back to Atlantis. And they kept on getting lifetimes where they knew the other souls and of the other sisters. And these other sisters were then going into the memory where they were that other person, and they were accessing it. So they were all accessing these different lifetimes together. So it does somehow make it apparent that with past life work, it's not just something that we individually create or generate through our own imagination or whatever. It's something that is a collective that links us all together, and that puts it on a much more profound stage, really, of what it's all about.
Exactly, because we can move from what was I in a past life, you know, was I Merlin, you know, all that rubbish, but you can get to what is my soul group here to achieve. And how do I find my soul group, and when do we start? That's the sort of level that quite a lot of the people who are listening to this show are at. It's like they're ready. I'd love to hear from you the processes that you've gleaned through all of these. And of course, you know, I'd like to hear about some of the other books that have been. I would imagine that they're kind of journals of your experiences, because the world that you live in, it's a bit like, you know, when you've got a subject with you, it's like having a terminal to the internet. You know, we're all familiar with Dolores Cannon and the way she uses her clients like a telephone to talk to Nostradamus and stuff. Across time and space, it's an extremely broad comprehensive base of information that you've got access to. What have you learned about this process in all that?
Well, I've learned lots of things, and I feel that my learning just continues to unfold, because I feel we're just at the beginnings of tapping into the sense of inner realities of what existence is all about through this kind of research. But the beauty of this kind of research is that it is experiential. So it's very subjective experiences, but subjective in a way where people can experience what is true and what feels true, going right into the core of our being, right into the very, very core and essence of who we are. And then we find we can go into that essence and find that there's actually even a deeper level, or more layers to it than we've realized. In recent years, I've also trained with the Newton Institute which is based around the work of Michael Newton, and his work is very, 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 very profound, and I would recommend to any of your readers to look up about his work. But with that work, Life Between Lives Therapy, it's also possible to investigate about your soul group and other souls that are linked with you, and how we can be linked more closely with some souls than others, and perhaps how at some stage in our evolution we reach a point where maybe our original soul group isn't so important anymore, even though we maybe love them so very much, that we might also get on to maybe doing our own research and work in spirit and expanding and maturing further as souls in our own direction. So we have more kind of working groups, and it starts to open up. Well, what is the nature of the spirit world where we go after we die, and what is that like? And, you know, from a Christian perspective, maybe just that it's, you know, all bliss and happiness and singing, you know, playing harps with the angels, it seems it's much more complex and multifaceted and interesting and something which we can only just begin to experience. So even doing things like Life Between Lives Therapy, where you can have a direct experience of what it's like in the spirit world, it's only just starting to open up to what is there and what we are able to channel as human beings through us about the nature of that reality.
Because this is fascinating, because he, as I said, the owner of the station, Dave Corso, left his body at the end of July. A week later, he was back on the show, because I interview mediums and people like that, and channelers, and Pleiadian channelers, and I thought she was coming on to just channel some Pleiadians, but she said, I've had this guy, he's been bugging me all week. And he says his name's Dave, and and basically he spoke to us from the other side live on my show.
It was
quite an experience. And he's still around, and he's still talking to people. You know, as I said, we have a lot of psychics and mediums who come on the show and are hosts here. So we're all, you know, wolf spirit is about wolf being grounded. You know, being in the den, being in a comfortable, non-triggery place, and spirit means spirit. we are really on a multidimensional place here. So you're quite at home. There's plenty of little delights and fancies on the table if you wish to have a pick. And of course, you know, there's a nice big hearth fire right in the middle of the room, and everybody's staying warm from it. So
yes, well, I can tell you a little bit more about one or two of my other books as well,
please.
So yeah, one of my books, I can see it in front of me here, called Marjorie. It was actually a tribute book that I've written to this very close friend of mine, Marjorie, that I worked with in the 1990s, and together we had a healing group, and she was a very great spiritual channel of a guide whose name was Sawyer, and through working with Marjorie, I became very much believing in the worth and reality that spiritual guides existed. So the book Marjorie is also about Marjorie's death and passing into spirit, because she died about 10 years ago. She had had crippling rheumatoid arthritis, which was somehow a big challenge for her, a huge challenge for her, and at times made her question the spiritual path that she was on, because she suffered such a lot with this crippling illness. But I think, like you were describing with your friend who owned the radio station, in Marjorie, there's also experiences of when she died and other people becoming aware of her presence. And about 18 months after she died, I went actually to Newbold House. And there I went up to the sanctuary at the top of the house and actually was able to channel Marjorie's spirit and the spirit of her guide, Sawyer, just about, you know, what it was like for them in the afterlife. So I've got that as part of this book, Marjorie. And then the second half of the book is really about the spiritual teachings that came through the years from her guide Sawyer. So it's a very simple book, but it's a very, you know, it's a lovely book about Marjorie and the tribute to her. And that was one in the end that I got self-published quite a number of years ago. And then I've got a new book which has just come out through in Balboa Press, which you can get on Kindle as well as the book. And it's called Ilsa, Ancient Celtic Leader. And this is also another book which is channeled from one of my past lives. It was a lifetime back in ancient Celtic times. But this book is written just really as one life, and the whole book is about that life. But it's written more as a kind of a story from those times. And it's just not only about my soul, but a group of souls that were really very, very well connected in that lifetime. And there's a lot of psychological interplay about the different dilemmas and challenges all of us as souls had in that lifetime, as well as it being a very interesting story just about the earth spirit and working with guides and energetic pathways and just a whole thing about how that society was sort of set up in, on very, very peaceful lines and the struggles and challenges they had as well. So that's my latest book called Ilsa, which has really only been published for the last few months or so.
And people can go to paulwilliamson.com?
Well, no. If you want to look me up, you can look me up on www.soulhypnotherapy.com. So it's soulhypnotherapy.com. That gets me. And you can go on Amazon to find out about Ilsa and get a copy of that if you want to.
So when you're talking about Ilsa, this is presumably you kind of went into depth did you do it by a self regression process or were you using the I just have to comment, the fact that you used somebody channeling their guides to hypnotize you I'd say that was a first.
Yes, I think so too. I think I don't know of anyone else that's ever done it that way. But it used to work actually very well. And it was actually while I was still working with Linda and Albany that I accessed, two or three sessions, around the lifetime as Ilsa, and explored it in some depth. And it was some years after that I got the guidance through my friend then, Catherine. And her guide sort of just suggesting that I could write, you know, there was something there that I could write a book of from one of these past lives. And I felt instinctively that it was this one as Ilsa. So after that, when I wrote it, I really just relied on my own instinct and intuition rather than going into regression, in a hypnotic way, to write out the book and to just let it unfold. And I just really needed to rely on what felt true inside of myself to be the guide from which I wrote it. So I'm not, you know, I can't be 100% sure, you know, if this is a, you know, exact replication of, you know, what actually happened back then. But it did feel right and true for me at every corner that I wrote it. And I certainly extended my understanding of it and the depth of the characters and what have you a long way from the initial regression. But I guess with Ilsa, it was something which I wrote at a time when when I was at a very low ebb in my life, and I was feeling quite weak about myself at the time. And so Ilsa was somehow one of my lives where I was a very, very strong, positive character in that life. So writing about her and writing a book about her life and presenting this was a very, very good therapy for me and helped me to sort of connect with my strength and the strong side of potential of who I am. So this this really helped me. And during the years that I wrote this book, I came out of that weak and vulnerable place to a point where now I feel I'm chugging a head full of gas.
That's an awesome, and that's really what it's about, isn't it, Paul? That's really, it's that's the healing that you've been needing, that Ilse, by drawing from her story, also draws her beingness into you and restores that mojo that you had lost. I can yeah. very much relate to that, and it's a potential avenue to explore. But what I find it fascinating is that it was a female warrior as well.
Yes, well that's true. It was a female person, although I mean I guess she had some male aspects to her character, but certainly very feminine as well. And it was kind of like a Mother Earth, the feminine times where the goddess energy was very, very strong. So it's a very interesting book in that way, presenting that. And I feel that just as it was a therapy for me, helping me, connect with my strength and positive spiritual endeavor and things like that, I feel it can work in that way for people reading it too. That people can go into the characters of this book and it can help, you know, to strengthen people's idealism and sense of spiritual power of living a good life and what can be achieved in that life.
That is something that it would be, well, I mean, this is, again, what I'm saying is that this is the benefit of being able to integrate these past lives and, well, past, present, future, it all, I mean, what we're being retaught is that time is not a linear thing. It's full of wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. It's like a bowl of spaghetti. That, you know, and then we're talking, you know, I've been talking with various people this week about a parallel dimension where, for instance, the Beatles may still be together. Yeah, there's a big internet meme going around that some bloke's been to a parallel dimension and brought back a cassette tape of Beatles. But I'm calling it, I believe it's a fake from my audio engineering perspective. It's like I can hear what they're doing and it's not right. Something doesn't match.
Yes, well, I guess all the experiences that we've ever had have a place in us where they are still alive and very, very real. And that's how people experience, you know, something like regression. You know, they can go into, you can do also memories from your life this time, and going into the regression state brings them somehow to life. So you can feel the emotions, you can really allow that memory just to really cascade through you in whatever form that it took. And, you know, so I guess that doing something like past life work, it can be very useful for you to get to know yourself. It can also help you to understand and release limiting patterns from the past that you don't want or need anymore. But I feel more than anything, going through past lives and going into your experience as a soul, it's helping you to know who you are. In essence, as a soul, as a spiritual being, you know, going through these different lifetimes, it is, you know, helping you be aware of the truth of who you are. And what I find as people start to access this in themselves is that it brings a very strong peace for people. People feel, you know, people can feel more connected with themselves, more able to live their lives without compromise, the way they truly are, and perhaps being more true, you know, to the path that they've chosen for themselves this time. So you can go ahead with that too. So I feel it has a lot of benefits, and I do have a sense that in our world today, it's one of the primary needs for our civilization is for us to connect more directly with who we are as spiritual beings. that we can channel and live that side of ourselves in our life today and start to fix up this planet from all the destruction and mayhem that's going on.
So that's fascinating. You're almost saying, like, we need to channel our own higher selves, essentially.
Well, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Many people have suggested that the barriers between the spiritual world and our physical world are lessening at the moment. And I believe that is true. But it's still up to us as human beings what we do about that. And if we take any notice of that or not. So, but I think more and more people are getting the inclinations to want to know who they are spiritually, to want to know who we are as souls. And that is helping to bring about this transformation where people are then more able to, you know, feel connected with themselves. And I hope that enough people will do that, that, you know, we can transform, you know, how we live our lives on Earth.
And that's the fascinating part, the way that we can see ourselves from how others see us, because that's what karma does to us.
But it is something, you know, certainly it would seem that when we go through a lifetime and when we leave that lifetime at the end of it, whatever we've experienced, we will have a review of that, so we can experience not only our own actions, but we will experience how our actions have impacted on others. So there really isn't anywhere for us to hide with this. We are who we are, and what we think, what we do, somehow we'll have to confront ourselves with that sooner or later. And that's what real karma is. It's like facing the truth inside of us of who we are, what we've done, how we've been, how our actions have impacted on others, how others have actions have impacted on us, and just finding a balance so that we can feel at peace with ourselves about all of that. And that means facing up to the truth of it to be able to do that well.
And that's the rub, isn't it? There's the rub. Facing up to the truth of what you've done and what its implications were. How?
Yes.
That can take a while, can't it? Because there's a lot of feeling, and how do people deal with that kind of thing?
Lots of very patient work, and also just how we tend to judge each other, how we judge ourselves and our own actions may not be somehow an accurate or very truthful analysis of you know what is the actual deep relevance of what has been going on for us. We can sometimes maybe feel that we've behaved in a really bad way or something like that, but there might be something about that which, a perspective on it, which we're entirely missing, which sort of puts it in a totally different way. So, you know, I guess a lot of us, we do things in our lives that maybe we don't feel so good about, but then, you know, there might be something about that that we're missing that would actually, you know, give reason for what's happened, that, you know, on a soul level, which takes it to a different, totally different plane of understanding when we understand what that is.
Okay, well, let's get on that plane of understanding and see where it takes us. Because, like you've been talking about, you have actually been working with soul groups, multiple soul groups or mainly your own?
Well, I do that a lot less these days than I used to do in the past. I think in that time when I was writing the Atlantis book, it was really, I was very personally involved around this particular soul group at that time through the Atlantis civilization and what we discovered about all of that. But I think in more recent years, my focus has been much more around helping people and just supporting other people through their processes without feeling any kind of need that I need to be personally involved. And I feel much more at peace and more at ease with doing that kind of work. And I can acknowledge the worth of the Atlantis experience that I had there, and it taught me a lot. But I'm more I'm more there for others than for myself, I feel, with my work these days.
So you feel that, you see, I feel that the work, the Atlantis work as well, was service to others by your documentation of it.
Yes.
Because it turned me on. And how many other thousands of people are turned on by that?
Yes, for a lot of people, you know, the whole idea that we're part of a soul group and you can have these very intensive interactions with other soul groups, or maybe we've got a twin flame or someone that is somehow like our soulmate, and, you know, how have we gone through different lives with those souls, and all of this kind of thing can be intensely interesting. But I also feel that ultimately in our process and our journey as souls, it's what we do and what we go through in our own personal learning. It's like anything which other members of the soul group or other souls bring to us, it's not about them so much that's important. It's how we respond to the experiences that they present us with. That's what helps us grow, what helps us evolve as souls and find out our true path forward. And you know, that's something which is most interesting for me to help people with.
And so it becomes a matter of attitude in the end.
Yes, well, I guess...
And what? Attitude, there's something, there's other factors. Attitude is one of them. There's a kind of... It no longer you get caught in the victim perpetrator mentality, do you?
No, well, that's very true, and I feel it's one of the things for us as souls, we are responsible for our own evolution and progress, and certainly, you know, through love and through closeness with others, we can support and help each other, and love certainly is so fundamental, and when we develop a love for another soul in one life, this love doesn't go away, but it's still there after we've left our bodies and gone into the spirit world, and that can be built upon through other lifetimes that we share with that soul. So love is something which really is eternal, and it can be a great comfort for people. Sometimes people come to me who perhaps a relative or someone very close to them has died, and they're able to maybe go back into a past life where they knew that soul in a past life, and then go to the end of that life where they leave that body, rise up into the spirit world, and there that soul is with them again. And they realize as they meet that soul in the spirit world how, you know, that soul is always there, will always be there, that there is no end to that love that is mutually felt between the two souls. And that can be extremely healing for people to experience.
And do people find that there are sometimes when people have a memory of somebody, or they say, oh, I kind of know you, is that ever spurious? Is that ever, like, misplaced?
Well, generally, people are quite surprised by what they experience in these sessions. There can be ego involvement. If somebody really wants to experience another person in a certain way, they might, you know, generate some experience that kind of reflects that back to them. But and there could be some reality to them. But sometimes, if people have that kind of motivation, then they'll only get some part of the story. If they're closed-minded about how they want that other person to be in relation to them, then this can affect what will come through in terms of genuine memory of the past. I feel that for most people, though, it is something, you know, just going into these experiences that can bring up such a lot of unexpected experience that people are given experiences that will help them learn and will help them develop a greater sense of perspective for the truth that is there. So I feel that the most important thing that people can bring to a session, if they're interested in accessing about their soul relationship with someone is openness. And, you know, you may find that there'll be lifetimes, you know, with a soul you're very close to, lifetimes that have worked out really well, and there might be some challenging ones. There might be ones where maybe you've been a very good character in that life, there might be ones where you've not been so great. And, you know, I feel that it takes, in terms of regression, it takes some courage to go into a lifetime maybe where you've been a victim and something terrible has happened to you. It takes more courage to go into a lifetime maybe where you've been more of a perpetrator and maybe you've lost your center in that life and closed your heart down and done some terrible things to others. It can be very humbling to go into those kind of experiences, but also very freeing too, because you realize, yeah, there's light and shadow in everyone, including yourself.
Thank you. Then you have the experience of people who have killed you in a previous life, who want to kill you in this life. What's that all about?
Yes, well, that can happen, that these kind of experiences can go from one lifetime to another. And you know, you can get the traces of that reading that Atlantis book that you've referred to, that I wrote, you know, in the way that Linda's soul and my soul in those lifetimes interacted at times. But it's something where you may have an experience with someone where that other person maybe hurts you very much, and you may feel that it's very unfair, and you may feel it's unjustified, and you may feel in yourself, well, I'm going to get them back for this. I'm not going to put up with this. They're going to suffer. If I suffer like this, they're going to suffer too. So that kind of thought and emotion can sort of just build up inside the soul. So, you know, the next lifetime when you meet that soul, you know, they might do something to irritate you, and then those feelings that have been generated just sort of come out, and you maybe do something terrible to them. And they may just have a similar response. They may feel, oh, this is all unfair, unjustified. I didn't deserve that. I'm going to get them back. And so it just goes on tit for tat over and over again, and it can go through many different lifetimes. And it will only end when one of those souls will decide, you know, that somehow, well, where's this getting me to do this to this other soul? You know, I really don't need to do this anymore. And somehow, maybe the first time, just force themselves not to react. So take a more peaceful route with it all. And, you know, when they do that, the other one might still, you know, keep on having reactions, and that's up to them. But for this soul, when they decide, you know, they're not going to perpetuate the pattern, that's when they start to learn, and that's when they're ready to start moving on to something else in their soul journey.
Would you say that that would be the entire purpose of life on Earth?
What's that? To work out that kind of pattern?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that that's just one small instance of one particular pattern that can come about. I mean, there's all sorts of traps and patterns that souls can get into. I mean, some souls, you know, can be quite sensitive, and, you know, every time they get hurt, they might sort of decide, well, I'm going to, you know, I don't want to be near anybody because I don't want to get hurt, so they go into isolation. And this can be a kind of a pattern that goes on and on. You know, some souls might just get a love for power and dominance and kind of just go through that life after life. Some can go into victim mentality and have that as a pattern which comes forward. You know, you can see that there's all sorts of patterns and experiences which, you know, can fire a soul up, get a soul also just kind of trapped and obsessed in a certain way of being, which sort of limits their growth and wholeness of who they could be.
Fascinating conversation, by the way, Paul. This is absolutely really lovely stuff. So it's coming up to the top of the hour, and normally on Wolf Spirit Radio, this time we play a little tune, let people take a little break, go to stretch legs and make another cup of tea, which is what I'm going to do. during this moment, if you're able to stay with us another hour or so, are you able to do that for us?
Yes, I could do that. That's probably long as I could stay with you, but another hour would be fine.
Okay, or if you'd like a shorter time, that's no problem either.
All right.
Okay, so we'll put a break on. This is Leonard Cohen's You Know Who I Am. I thought this was most appropriate.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
You are indeed. Thank you, Tracy. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. This is Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio. It's, it's nearly October. It's September the 21st. It is equinox today. And there's quite a lot going on. So I'm talking with Paul Williamson, author of... author of Atlantis, the Dark Continent, Soul Pathways, Healing Journeys, and a whole truckload of others.
Well, not so much a truckload. I've got one other one called A Seeker's Guide to Past Lives, which was written about past lives. And I've got Marjorie that I talked about a little bit, and my most recent book called Ilse, Ancient Celtic Leader.
But in addition to that, you're a touring lecturer. You give talks.
Yeah.
How frequent do you do gigs?
Well, I mainly work between the UK and Australia at the moment. I occasionally have go to different parts of Europe as well, but those are my main two locations for working. I haven't ever been to the United States to do any work. I guess I'd be open to doing that at some point if the opportunity came to me. But I am very much a kind of traveling healer, I feel. And I go to lots of mind-body-spirit festivals where I do short introductory sessions of my work. And then I also work with people on longer individual sessions, which can go from an hour, 2 hours to, you know, life between live sessions, which can be 4 hours or more. So it's very interesting work, and I'm able to tailor my work according to what people's needs might be in this regard.
Wonderful. Well, let's see. You may get some exposure in America for this. Because we're a Pacific-based Nevada based station. Although I am in Scotland. It's a long story, but anyway, so we're now kind of America and UK, and we're bringing in an Australian host starting, I think, next week, Helena Phoenix. So we'll be bringing in more and more people all around the world. So here's the thing, Paul. Do you have a line of research which you sort of, do you have a kind of news feed sort of thing? Do you publish the things that come to you, the things that appear in your work and stuff like that? Like the, you know, nuggets. Do you have a basket of nuggets that you publish or anything like that?
Well, on my website I do have a blog, but I have been very neglectful about putting things on my blog, so I could develop that side of things much better than I do. I do have a concept for a new book that I want to write called Earth Warrior, which is going to be just set just very slightly in the future, because I do feel that our planet is going into a time of crisis at the moment, I guess, you know, with our human journey as a civilization on the planet, and I do have a sense things could go either way, so it's quite critical times, I feel, at the moment, and I'd be interested to write a book from a soul perspective about how things are unfolding. So I guess there are others that are writing similar kind of books, but I'd be interested to do my own take on it.
Ah, now there is a seam of many nuggets, because having having past lives. Yeah, everybody's got past lives, but very, very few people talk about future lives. There is one that I know of, and I produce a radio show for him, and then, in fact, I'm going to be producing for him in a few hours' time. His name is Sean David Morton, and he did a Tibetan ritual which does a kind of body swap with his future self.
Oh.
And he basically died in front of an audience of several thousand people, and his future self took over his body and gave a lecture and then zipped off back, and they did this thing, and it's called the Vajra Chronicles. And so have you, in your experience, ever progressed a subject? Yeah. And what happens? And can you do it once again and again, or do things change, and how do things change? I've got so many questions. Is time a bubble? You know,
you seem to have a great curiosity, Jay.
I've been a Doctor Who fan since I was a kid. I was fascinated by Houdini and hypnotism and the way that people under hypnosis can have superpowers. You know, you can make someone invisible to them, or you can give them X-ray vision. It's unbelievable what hypnosis does to a person, like I said. And I've been fascinated also by the post-war CIA / neo-Nazi continuation of the mind control experiments, and that's what Dave was involved in, and it all comes down to a terrific amount of trauma. Again, that was reflected back in these early days that you were writing about in the characters from Atlantis life. For instance, when you consider those past lives, do you think, oh, that was me? Do they feel like your character, or do they feel like somebody else's business? How much is you in there?
Well, you've asked two questions. I'll
probably asked about 18. I'm sorry. I got excited about it. I'm so stoked to have you on there. It's really good. You have no idea.
Well, I'll answer about that question you just asked at the end there. Seems a really good one to talk about.
Okay.
First, just about the future lives. I have done quite a bit of future life work with people, and people can come forward with very interesting projections going into the future of what their soul may be. Sometimes I experience these future lives as perhaps not quite fully formed, like perhaps you would get a past life, because these are like, you know, potentials. They're not quite made fully yet. You know, they're still being constructed. And I feel also that we cannot really fully tell what the future is going to be, because it depends on our free will and how we decide, and we might, you know, take a decision, you know, at some point in our lives that can take things in a completely different course than what they might have otherwise. So these past lives give very, very interesting projections, but I don't feel that they're necessarily true projections of what actually is going to happen. They're perhaps possible projections for possible realities that may be there in the future for us. But therapeutically, they can be very interesting and useful, because they can speak to us of potentials that are inside of us as well. And they certainly can give some very interesting kind of slants about reality as it may be forming. And that can go beyond our personal self too. So I think it's a really worthwhile and interesting kind of field of endeavor. But it's got a slightly different sense of reality about it to, say, past lives. That's just my own opinion about it. So that's my answer to the first question you brought up. And the second one, which is you were asking about both about trauma and just how I sensed, say, you know, those lives of being Atlantis, if they felt like me, and, you know, how do I sort of feel that in relation to myself today? Well, I do tend to feel, even though we can look on time as being elastic and, you know, not linear and all these kind of things, I do feel that there is a kind of progression of what happens for us with souls as we go through lives. And even though some of those lifetimes in Atlantis were, you know, very dynamic and strong and having all these different qualities about them, when I went through those lives, I did tend to feel them as something that I'd moved beyond somehow. They seemed to be me, but like earlier versions of me. And that's how I tended to experience them. And that wasn't me trying to experience them in that way. That was how they came across, you know, into my consciousness. So I feel that each of these past lives adds to a certain sense of who we are, and they're like kind of foundations for who we are today. And each lifetime contributes. And, you know, at the end of a lifetime, we draw into us the fruits of that lifetime, and that helps us as souls become a little bit more mature. So we continue on that journey each lifetime, helping our maturity, even though we might have, you know, setbacks where we maybe mess up a bit and have to repeat things, you know, over, you know, once or many times. Still, that journey of gradual maturity, and it might come more rapidly in some lives when we sort of really make some very important strides of inner learning. You know, that's how it works as far as I can determine it. So that's how I experienced the Atlantis lives. They were me, but they didn't quite feel like me now.
Thank you. I mean, I admire your candid. Oh, forget it. Thank you for your honesty. Shoes. When you're working in past lives, do you ask people about their shoes?
Yes, we do. Mm. Yes, well, it's kind of like, the first thing that I have to do with people when they go into a past life is to just really get them to focus and be aware in all different aspects about their identity of who they are there, so they can let themselves start to really channel that and channel the thoughts, feelings and memory of that life, so that they're sort of occupied and focused on that rather than who they are today and other things that might occupy them. So, yes, I find it very important to first of all help them to ask them and help them become aware, you know, what they're standing on the ground under their feet, and then I guess what they've got on their feet too, what they're wearing. So, you know, that can just really help with the identity awareness, you know, just becoming clearer in the person. So yeah, I guess in different lives people can be wearing all sorts of stuff. So it's just a matter of for the person to be asked and for them to answer what comes forward.
So, because I'm just wondering, you know, you got this feminine side, yeah? Does the feminine side notice the shoe? Because it's fascinating, like shoe technology, shoe progression.
Oh.
Have there been shoes that enable people to be grounded in the past? Have we moved away from things like that? Because, you know, I'm thinking on a very practical, is there a way to get back to some sense that isn't as disconnected as we are today?
I'm sure there are, and it is one of the things where some of these civilizations from the past can have aspects about them which maybe are more advanced or precious or maybe spiritually connected than the kind of world we're living in today. And I mean, certainly that book Ilsa that I've just written is about, you know, that civilization in ancient Celtic times has a lot about it, which, you know, if we lived like that today, you know, in terms of how we connected with nature and worked with nature and what have you, and the earth spirit and what have you, that could make life a lot better for all of us if we did that. And so I guess that can be also on the kind of clothing and things like that. So, you know, I do feel that our civilization has risen and fallen, so we could find out things. I have to admit that I haven't really specifically gone into, you know, shoes in the way that you're suggesting. You know, I feel that it could be certainly a viable avenue of research.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, it's part of the Atlantis thing about the idea that there were, there's a lot of crystalline material that is used in, you know, just even the walkways and things like that, that would generate light and heat and things like that to make the place comfortable.
Yes. Well, I guess that Atlantis seemed to be a place where the crystals were a central part of their whole society, and that people were affected by the power of the crystals. It affected their nervous system, and, you know, there was so much from crystals which people were able to utilize in different ways. It made people a lot more sensitive, all this crystal energy around them, but also could distort, because the power of the crystals could make people feel euphoric, like perhaps, you know, some drugs do. So people want more and more of it, which was how people could get into the kind of power distortions from that time. And I guess, you know, with microchips and all sorts of things these days, you know, the crystals are still being, you know, utilized in lots of different ways today, perhaps taking up some of the ways that they were used then.
Well, certainly, you know, as you say, a microchip is indeed a crystal implant. It's exactly the, you know, same material. It's miniaturized in the way that it's programmed. It's a microelectronics, but it's still as you say, a piece of crystal. Quantum entanglement brings these things together. You know, if you have one piece of crystal, break it into two, they have a quantum entanglement with each other, and so you can communicate with them. That's what the book that's what your book told me. But it's let's zoom it out a little bit. Before Atlantis, there was something else, wasn't there?
Well, there was suggested in Atlantis, the book when we were writing it, about other earlier civilizations. And certainly from doing regression into ancient civilizations, it would seem that, you know, what we know in history about where we've come from is only like the tip of the iceberg in terms of, you know, civilizations that have existed on our planet. And I do feel that that's very likely to be true, that there have been a lot of very, very interesting civilizations here from the past, that, you know, the traces of them have been largely lost now. But perhaps, you know, through regression, it is something where, you know, we can find out about some of those things. And, you know, there is the legend of other civilizations like Lemuria and Mu and what have you that go back further, but lots of others as well. And, you know, it is a fascinating thing to start to realize where, you know, where the history, the hidden history of souls and what's happened here. And I think that's a kind of research which, you know, there could be a lot found about that.
Oh, I've got another one. Have you ever regressed anyone into being other than human?
Yes.
And not just animal, but also mineral and what we might regard as, you know, Bigfoot, Yeti, Sasquatch, or other elves, fairies, other members of those kind of kingdoms. Have you explored that direction? It's fascinating because there's, you know, it's like a window into the world.
Yes. I'll answer that question gradually. So I'll start with something. Sometimes when people go into regression, they might find that they are, you know, maybe they're male now and they go into a regression where they're female. Or maybe the other way around, they're female now and go into a regression where they're male. And it can be a very interesting experience for people to go into that. Because generally, you know, I ask them, well, are you male or female? And very often, if they're a member of the opposite sex in their past life, there'll be a kind of a pause, and they'll somehow realize that something's different with them in the past life to who they are today. And then finally it will trigger, I think I'm male, or I think I'm female, if, you know, of the opposite kind. And then they'll sort of gradually adjust to it so that they can start to accept that they are in a form different of who they are today. So that can be just really in terms of the sex of who you were in the past life in human terms. But yes, people can experience lots of other very, very interesting things as well, which can be like some of the examples. I've had people go into lives where perhaps they were nature spirits, helping the nature, or perhaps where they were an animal in a past life. I have sometimes experienced people, you know, maybe even some watery kind of creature, and certainly where people have accessed lives where perhaps they were living on other worlds and not living on the earth. Or even lives where they're not in a physical world, but they're in some kind of mental or energetic world. There are all kinds of different realities that can come up for people, and I find as a therapist, the thing which I just need to do is to ask open questions, so I can really just encourage the reality and the experience that comes forward from the person without having any agenda on my part, so that, you know, so it's possible for them to accept, you know, what it is that is channeling through them.
Awesome. So, okay. It is said that at some point in our incarnation process, we forget. We're zapped by some flash, some electric jolt that removes our conscious memory of other lives and other beings and anything like that. What has your research told you about that, if anything?
I don't know about any zap or anything like that. Certainly there does seem to be some kind of contraction process from who we are as souls when, you know, strands of us sort of come into conception to begin a new life. But it's amazing to me, you know, when I do regression with people, just how readily the experiences of other lives just can start coming forward. It can be, you know, I can work with people in a matter of minutes, just a couple of minutes, someone can be just starting to channel their life, their past life. It's something which, you know, these memories are quite close to the surface. And once people do start to be able to access them, and I guess what regression is, it's a deliberate process to bring these memories forward. But once that's been opened, then it can open more and more easily for people as their life goes on. So it's just like kind of opening up to a faculty which, you know, is very close and very much connected with our inner consciousness. And of course, you know, there are lots of people that have dreams or deja vu experiences or just memory flashes coming to them in the course of their everyday life. These things are not far away at all. They're right in there in our consciousness.
And And what of parallel realities? Have you... All right, so here's the thing. Oh, man, so many things. How much we've got time? Right. Parallel realities. So, for instance, okay, in this reality, this guy, JP here, he was a computer programmer when he was young. He always loved playing with sound, wanted to be a sound engineer and a computer programmer. That's my ambition in life. That all comes together now, and in the internet comes the ability to speak to the people I desire, and get the piece of the puzzle that everybody's got, and bring all the pieces of puzzle together so that everybody else can piece them together as well. Your wisdom, your information here, Paul, is just invaluable. I think it's matter of fact, it's non-judgmental, it's very clear and very clean. So thank you very much for presenting it here on Ever Beyond, Paul.
That's a pleasure, Jay, and it's been a privilege for me to talk with you and have the opportunity to speak about my work to your listeners and to you. And, certainly, I'll just mention again my website if I can do a bit of plugging for myself.
Plug away and take as much time as you like. Also talk if you've got YouTube channels or how people can find you, if they want sessions and all this stuff. Advertise yourself. knock yourself out.
I think probably the main thing would be going onto my website, which is www.soulhypnotherapy.com. And I do have a Facebook work page as well, which is Paul Williamson Therapy on Facebook. I'm in the process of setting up some kind of YouTube thing. I haven't actually done, my son, who is much more technically minded than me, is sort of getting that organized. But I'm a little bit behind in the technological front, so hopefully in the next year or two I'll have some good YouTube things going as well. Yes, there's a talk I gave a couple of years ago in London, which you can access from my website as well. I don't know what else to say. I'm happy to work, and if I get opportunities wherever they are, I'm happy to just follow the thread and do what I need to do. So it's a great privilege to be able to help people to access who they are as souls, just to help people introduce them to their soul consciousness and start to learn who they are. And I know that once people start that kind of search, it can easily become a lifelong search that just goes on and on through different stages of discovery and exploration. Not only that, as I said before, I feel as we learn about our soul, we find that a sense of great peace, that helps us feel more certain about the way we're living our lives. So I wish all of you that have listened to this tonight, I just wish all of you every success and peace and discovery on your own soul journey. And thank you very much for having me.
Do you still do workshops?
Yes, I do workshops. Yes, I can do, I specialize probably more with individual sessions these days, but yes, I can do workshops a day, a weekend, a week, whatever. And I can do work, not only past life work, life between lives work. I also love doing inner child healing because I feel that our child consciousness often can be wounded, and to be able to help people access their child consciousness and bring it into a more harmonious relationship with their adult self and adult consciousness, this can be very, very healing and helping people to be more in harmony with themselves. Also just, helping people to bring out withheld communication and release fears and what have you from their early life this time, that can be all very, very useful. So that's a strand of work that I do, and I'm very happy to help people connect with their spirit guides as well, with wise, spiritual, loving beings that are helping them. So, I mean, you know, other people do this as well, but that's something which I integrate into my work for anyone who has a need to do that. So I can do workshops which combine all of those features, past lives, life between life work, also inner child work, connecting with spiritual guides. All of those things can fit together very, very well in the workshop.
Yeah, great. And have you got any more gigs up coming up this? When's the next gig?
What do you mean by gig? Like interview, like we're doing?
Oh well, interview. Do you have any YouTube interviews or or TV appearances or any kind of? Are you extending yourself extruding into the universe? At any point?
Yes, I tend to be. I'm not so so much somebody that sort of just really puts themselves out there, perhaps as much as some other people. So I've been a little bit just doing my own thing. I guess at the moment I'm presently in London, and I've been very much involved in Scotland with the referendum for independence, which has been going on there, and I've been very much passionately supporting Scotland to have its independence, so that's kind of come out no for now. Sadly,
I know. But we can talk about this, but I feel that it's been a psyop, and it's a kind of a mass demoralization program for the beautiful people of Scotland.
I feel so. I feel that it's been a real chance for the people of Scotland to embrace their sense of inner freedom and self-determination. And I feel that it's something which is going on in the world at the moment, that not only are people needing to find their soul consciousness, but their sense of who they are and an inner sense of freedom to self-determine their own lives. But this is not just happening on an individual level. This is happening on a collective level, and it seems to be happening in more and more different places at different times. And you have things like the Arab Spring, which I felt, you know, when it started was a fantastic thing, but of course that's been crushed. And now, you know, with Scotland, that's another example where the people there have just in recent months discovered their sense of identity as a nation and a feeling of freedom, and that they can determine their own lives. And people have become so passionate about that in these last months with this referendum. And yet, I guess what's happened with the referendum is it's needed for enough people in that country to get out of their own fears, so they'd be willing to embrace that state of inner freedom and nationhood to say yes. And unfortunately, not enough did. So, and those people that have, did find that passion and then for the whole thing to be turned down, I've been speaking with quite a lot of them today, and the sense in Scotland of those people, they're heartbroken. They're absolutely heartbroken.
I know.
More of their compatriots and fellow citizens couldn't have supported something which for them just felt so needed. And it's just that Scotland and England and the rest of Great Britain, they do have their own identity, and it goes back thousands of years. Hadrian's Wall. They were a different race in those times to the English, and they've got a totally different kind of consciousness and a way how they want to relate to each other than the English do. Well, it doesn't mean any anti-English feeling, it's just that these people are wanting to affirm who they are as a race together. And, you know, I feel that's right, and it should be encouraged. And there are other nations and things, you know, where this is emerging too in the world, and I feel that is, you know, it is part of the emerging consciousness that's going on at the moment. And, hopefully, you know, with each of these instances of them, even if they don't succeed at this stage, there'll be seeds that will go on, and we'll find some further expression later on, whether it be Scotland or Catalonia or wherever it is in the world. And I wish all of these groups well.
I totally agree, Paul. I totally agree. You know, everybody's kind of gutted, but again, everybody's come out of this with this renewed sense of, yeah, well, actually, we can make a splash. And this was the first time, but it's not going to be the last. And we've done it, and not a drop of blood has been spilt. Well, I don't know. I don't know about Glasgow on Friday night. We're yet to see what happens tonight. Is it a full moon? No, it's a new moon. So it may be a more inner thing. People will be sitting crying in their beer or something like that quite a lot. And, you know, my heart goes out to everybody here because a lot of people have put a lot of creative juices and excitement and hope into this. And as you know the Findhorn community, you know, a lot of them are my friends, so there's definitely support for the independence from the bank.
Yes, I looked up on some of the Yes sites for up there to notice that, you know, the Findhorn people were going for independence too. But yes, I'm aware, you know, on a personal basis, how for quite a lot of Scottish people, when they voted yes in that referendum yesterday, it was the most important experience of their whole lives. You know, it was something which nothing has touched them like that in their whole life.
It's like finding your voice.
And real it is for them. A nation which has been so suppressed. And now, you know, like a different way future is possible. That was one of the things the Yes campaign put forward. And how disappointing that, you know, the battle hasn't been lost with the English or any other culture or the biased media or anything like that. It's been lost with not enough people actually saying yes.
Well, it's, you know, there's a lot of I'm really I've spoken to some really interesting people, Paul, and some of them involved in the military version of what you were doing in Atlantis, right? And I know they've got time travel, you know. I've spoken to a time traveler who was doing it in like 1968 when he was six, you know, he was like eight or something. And they sent him through the portals and everything. And he's, you know, he's our age. He's my age. And so, they've got all sorts of tricks and toys. And I get the feeling that they went into the future, saw the kind of groups that voted for yes, and targeted them with massive amounts of fear porn to make them vote no. That's how paranoid I get.
Yes, well, I do. There has been a massive amount of manipulation to induce fear in the population in Scotland around this referendum, which is not very nice, really, because I do feel that the majority of Scottish people, left to their own devices, would very, very naturally choose independence at this time. It's the fear induced in them that has stopped the majority from saying that. And that's just really, you know, there are some in Scotland that would genuinely prefer the union with the rest of the UK, and they feel that, you know, the UK is their identity rather than, you know, wanting to be having just a Scottish nationality. But I know that that's a minority. That's a fairly small minority, I feel, in Scotland. So yes, it has been an effort, you know, and I guess it is something I saw on one of the websites that it's like a person that has been suppressed all their life, maybe just like a bird in a cage. And, you know, on this, with this independence possibility, it's like the cage door has been opened for them. And so what are they going to do? Do they just stay in the same place that they know, where they've been all the time? Or do they do something different and maybe come out of the cage? And I guess, you know, that's what the people in Scotland have been, you know, it's been put to them. Well, you know, are you coming out or staying? You know, of course, if you come out, don't know how it will be, might stumble, might, you know, might fall, all sorts of things might happen. But what do you choose? And I feel, well, in this situation, you know, to know freedom and to experience it, how much better is that than just staying in a cage all your existence and never doing anything else?
You know, you're saying that reminds me of that film that went around a few years ago of the beagles that had been released from the laboratories. They'd never been out of the cage, and they were put on grass, and there they sat in the cage. You know, they had to be really coaxed out, because that's all they knew. The cage was all their entire life. Yeah. That's a metaphor, and it's also heartbreaking.
Yes, well, I guess, you know, there are lots of forces in the world at the moment, and I think something like the internet, we're talking through the internet, does really help to spread knowledge and help to spread possible different forms of living, you know, to all the people in the world. It makes our world a much smaller place, which I feel is a great thing. And you know, it helps people unlock a little bit their potential to grow and expand, rather than stay fixed like that. But then you have other things like, you know, television and McDonald's and, you know, all sorts of things like that, which actually more perhaps, you know, focus people in a more limited way, if I'd be able to say it that way without causing insult to any of the things I just said. So that you know, it's kind of like a and the kind of films you see in the cinema and things like that, it can really create a mass of sameness about people through how things are presented. But the joy for all of us is for us to express our individuality, who we truly are as beings, and we are all are completely unique. And yet we are also connected. So it's somehow to bring those two forces together, that we are connected, we are unique individual beings, and by being ourselves, somehow there'll be harmony. And it doesn't mean for any particular group or self-interest to dominate over the others. Just by being who we are, you know, and expressing and being tolerant and respectful of that, that's how we create a better world.
Being who we are, which is love.
Yes, which is love. It's exactly the truth. And I guess we're all in our own imperfect ways, you know, aspiring towards that. You know, we all do make mistakes and what have you, but I guess, you know, if we don't make the effort, we won't get anywhere.
You know, you're absolutely right. You can't make an omelette without breaking eggs, obviously, and you can't make eggs out of an omelette.
Right.
And I love food analogies because, you know, cause I like food. That's the kind of person. Anyway. This is part of the healer's way, that we nourish. We find ways of nourishing people, of making food that is good for you and tasty and full of life and all those good things. In your explorations, again, the way we eat changed? Or, you know, did we always use knives and forks? What did, how, do we, Is there a food modality that is perennial? Has that actually kind of been part of your? Have you noticed any of this?
Well, I guess you go into civilizations like Atlantis, where food and what have you was blessed and what have you, and that's made a big difference. But in most past lives, sort of, or more recent ones, yes, you might go back to eating out of bowls or just not having anything and just eating with fingers or things like that. There are different ways how people have lived, and certainly just going back through more recent times, you do get a sense of things being more, more primitive in some ways. And I could ask what people sleep on, and they might have a bed or a bench or maybe just sleeping on the floor or something like that going back in time. So it's just a matter of going with what comes up. And I guess, occasionally you might find something which is, sounds rather nurturing and different in those kind of modes. But yes, it's not a direction that I've focused on greatly, I must say, Jerry.
Well, it's just these things that you might be sawing a bench or or doing some repairs, and you have these little thoughts. I wonder if Atlantis did this, they did this sort of thing. How different? Did they have screws? Did they use glue? How did they stick things together? How did they put shelves up? I think of these kind of questions.
Yes, well, it was once put to me by Linda's guide, Albany, that, if we were to write a second book on Atlantis, it would be a good one to write just about all the practical side of things and, how they went about things and what have you, like what you're saying, just everyday things. But we never got to it.
Hmm. Well, if you would like another subject... Because I'm sure I was a bit of a tinker in those days as well as I am today. I'm standing here. I'm sitting here. I'm surrounded by crystals and copper plates and copper coils and pyramids and headbands and stuff.
So you might have Atlantis connection.
I might. my girlfriend says she recognizes me from Atlantis, and I was this. I was a twat then, and I'm a twat now, that sort of thing.
Well, I can say, Jay, if you decide to take that path, who knows what you might get yourself into?
Well, a book?
Yeah.
Might be interesting, I mean, that subject matter, that would be the kind of book that I would like to have to write. Is Atlantis, what it would be like on an everyday practical level, what Atlantis was like and how different it is and how similar it is and things like that.
Well, I'd be very happy to do an exploratory session, I guess, to start with you sometime, Jay, if you'd like to arrange it. And we could first of all check out if you can go into one of your lives in Atlantis and find out what that was about, and could go from there.
That would be awesome.
Or write a book about that if you want to.
That would be an awesome seam to find McNuggets in. I think this is about a good time to wrap things back up again. Paul.
Yes, I'd be happy to finish there now. Now, Jay, I really enjoyed it talking to you, but I can sense myself getting a bit tired now, so I'd be happy to finish with you and just give thanks for it and wish you well with your radio station as well.
Bless your heart. Thank you so much. This is Paul Williamson on soulhypnotherapy.com. Is that right?
I can't hear your voice at the moment, Jay.
Is it soulhypnotherapy.com?
It's www.soulhypnotherapy.com.
Yep. We don't need to use the www. You can just put you don't need it anymore. You never did. It's just, anyway, long story. But thank you so much, Paul. This has been Ever Beyond, just after the break, I'm going to put Paolo Nutini on. Do you know? Have you heard of Paolo Nutini?
Jay, I can't. The last 5 minutes, I haven't been able to hear what you're saying.
Oh, is our signal breaking up? Okay, my friend. God bless you. Thank you. We're closing the show, and thank you so much, Paul. Good night.